Wisconsin has a lot of sites that tell a story about Native American history.
One of the most spectacular in terms of its natural and man-made wonders is Rocha Cree, a state park near Adams and Friendship in central Wisconsin.
State archaeologist John Broyhan can tell us where we're going to find there. And John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, first I have to confess, I have lived in Wisconsin my whole life, and I've driven by that sign a million times, and I've never turned in, and it sounds like I'm missing something. Let's start with the real practical element of this. Where is Rocha Cree State Park?
It's located just a short distance north of Adams Friendship along State Trunk Highway 13.
Now, let's talk about that name a little bit. What does Rocha Cree mean?
Well, I looked it up. I had to look it up, too, and there are a couple definitions. The one that seems to be most frequently used is crevice in the rock. But I also found a definition that indicated that it might mean shouting or whooping rock.
So one of the promos for this was that it contains a lot of natural and man-made wonders. So let's start with the natural wonders first. What is it about Rocha Cree State Park that makes it such a pretty place?
I think it's the sandstone outcrops there. It was during the glaciation. It was on the bottom of Glacial Lake, Wisconsin. And there was a good deal of erosion, but not all of the sandstone eroded away. And so you have these great tall sandstone outcrops that extend very high in the air. And if you crawl up to the top or climb up to the top of the stairs at Rocha Cree, you can see central Wisconsin. So it's a very spectacular place.
And so getting to history for a bit here, what do we know about Native American presence at the park? When did they first come there? And do we know what attracted them to this particular site?
Well, Native people were in central Wisconsin 10 or 11,000 years ago. The rock art there in the rock painting there probably dates to much later in time, maybe 3,500 years ago. And the reason they chose that particular location, I think, remains a mystery. It's not a typical rock art location in the sense that it's not in a cave or in a crevice cave. It's in an exposed area. Perhaps something happened when people were visiting there that indicated it was an important spiritual place. Perhaps there was some other event there that drew people to that. Maybe this French name of whooping or shouting rock. There was some sort of a sound that came out of that rock at some point. Maybe it was struck by lightning, something like that.
So let's talk about those rock paintings, because that is very intriguing. And a lot of people, when they think of paintings like that, they think of some of the famous ones that they've read about in magazines and so forth. But right here in Wisconsin, we've got these terrific examples. You say they're about 3,500 years old, give or take. Tell us what we're looking at when we're looking at these paintings.
Well, there are rock paintings there, and those paintings are done in reddish or reddish-orange pigment. They seem to depict four characters. These characters, in some instances, they look like human beings, and others, they look like birds. They are, in fact, probably spiritual beings that are taking on the characteristics of human or birds as they move through their spiritual world. The wings look like thick tooth combs. The bodies are broad-shouldered, narrow hips. They kind of look like terracotta pots for flowers and that sort of thing.
So do we know exactly who painted these?
The paintings were probably done between around 1300 or 1400 years ago, or AD. And at that point, people in that area were, archaeologists referred to them as Oneota. They were agriculturalists, grew corn, beans, and squash. And so that's the communities that were present in the area.
So when did archaeologists and historians or others first become aware of these? And how did they find them? They were just walking through the woods and saw them?
Yes, the people, as they moved through that area, they recognized them in the middle part of the 19th century as the paintings weren't visible initially. They were really not recorded until the 1980s. Before that, people quickly recognized that there were carvings there. Some of these look like a V with a line in the middle or a Y with a line in the middle. Others look like crescents. Some people refer to those as canoes.
Now, early on, you mentioned that these differ from a lot of other paintings and things that we see because they're more exposed. And I have to ask, how have they survived all these years?
They're in remarkable shape, actually, considering the fact that they're on a south-facing exposure, and there's nothing at this point in time. There's not a lot of tree cover in the area to keep them away from the hot sun of summer or the cold winds of winter. And they're exposed to the rain and the snow, so that's really the biggest threat to rock art sites in Wisconsin at this point in time, are just natural elements.
And elsewhere in Wisconsin, how common are rock art? How common are rock paintings?
Rock paintings are extremely uncommon. We only know about 10 of those in Wisconsin. Rock art itself, currently we have a list of about 160 locations. That's certainly underrepresents the number of rock art sites that are probably out there.
And in terms of ones that are accessible to the public that we could actually go take a look at, how common is that?
Rocher Cree remains the only publicly accessible rock art site.
Really? I had no idea. So when you say accessible, and I've not been there, as I say, so if I want to go take a look at these things, is it right off of a trail? Is it easy to get to if I'm interested in taking a walk there?
It is, actually. It's right on the entrance road, and there's a parking lot nearby, and then there's a viewing platform in front of the rock art that has a series of panels that talk about the rock art and explain how it was done and what it dates to.
So as you look at those now, you tell me they're in remarkable shape for their age. How do you keep them that way? Do you take any preservation efforts, or do we just let them age naturally?
Up to this point in time, we've just let them age naturally. We have documented them about as thoroughly as you can. We've taken a variety of color and black and white images. We've done drawings. So that's really the preservation way we preserve them at this point in time. In the past, people have tried to take molds of them. But those, in many cases, taking those molds actually probably do more damage than not taking the mold. So we've sort of stayed away from that. There are some new advances in photography, digital imaging, that people are working with, and that may be another way that we can address the long-term preservation of these sites.
So as you take a look at these from sort of an archaeological perspective, do you have any ideas, any speculation, any knowledge as to how significant these paintings may have been when they were first created? Were they more like graffiti, or was it more than that, something more serious?
Well, most of these paintings occur in caves or crevice caves, and those are seen as entrance points between the our world and the underworld. And so these were very spiritually charged areas, and so it leads us to believe that these paintings and these carvings were very much spiritually derived and oriented. They may have told important stories about the community. They may have been done by individuals who were seeking guidance from the spirit world or trying to seek a balance with the spirit world. It seems unlikely that they were just done as graffiti or were just done as fun.
And you also mentioned carvings. Are those in the same location as the paintings, or are those elsewhere in the park?
No, they're in the same location as the paintings. And then if you go there, you'll also see a good deal of later carvings, what we refer to today as graffiti, people's names and dates and that sort of thing. So some of the earlier carvings have been disfigured by the later carvings.
So in terms of popularity with members of the public, is this a park that gets a lot of visits?
Yeah, it is very popular. It's centrally located, and if you're interested in experiencing one of Wisconsin's many different environments, going to Rocher Cree gives you a chance to get a feel for the Central Sands. It's very different than going to the Driftless area in southwestern Wisconsin or up north into the Great Forest.
So, and I also want to return to the idea of what the future of these paintings, these carvings look like. You mentioned that some of the carvings had graffiti and other carvings on them. How do you or do you protect them? Obviously, you can't be there 24 hours a day. Do you have problems with vandalism? Do you have problems with people trying to damage them?
There are occasionally, there is some evidence that people have visited some of these locations and left their names and initials. It seems to be more and more infrequent. And the best tool for protecting them is, A, to get them recorded and documented, and then B, to make sure that everybody understands how important they are, how fragile they are, and how once the damage is done, you really can't undo it.
And it also makes me wonder, as you describe these paintings and these carvings, do you ever speculate as to whether there are other paintings and carvings out there somewhere that we just simply haven't found yet?
Yes, we do. We're just convinced that there are a lot more carvings and rock art sites, particularly in southern Wisconsin, central Wisconsin, and even in up north where you get some of the Precambrian bedrock outcrops.
Well, John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was State Archaeologist John Broyhan, and we've been talking about Rocha Cree State Park.